Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com, RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com, and Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to House Calls Vermont. I'm Jim Bradley, and I'm here with Chris West, my colleague and friend.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And today we wanted to inform you once again that this is our season final show, or final season show.
Finale.
Finale, well.
Finally the finale.
Came up a little bit quicker than we thought. There's playoffs starting next week, but then after that, with the harbinger of spring today, they will be having the garden show on Saturdays until the fall, and that we suspect will be returning at that point in time. But for today, we do have a few topics that we wanted to touch base on.
Let's just jump in. Between now and then,
yes,
if you're still interested in listening to House Calls Vermont, we are setting up a call-in version of this show on our YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And to find our YouTube channel, you go to a search engine and you type in House Calls Vermont YouTube, and it'll just pop up, and you can subscribe there and get, you know, click on the little bell to get notifications. On Tuesdays, starting in the first week of April, that's April 6th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. we'll be on. We'll be talking about topics. We'll be having interviews with building scientists and builders and all kinds of people. We'll also be taking calls. So just keep that in mind. I'll give you that number now. That's 802-200-2550. And that's starting on the 6th of April, 7 p.m. Call in with your questions. In the meantime, if you have questions, even during this entire summer when we won't be around, please feel free to send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. I'm sorry, housecallsvt@gmail.com.
And so for now, there's a couple things. We have several topics. You know, being the last show, we wanted to say, okay, which one do we start with?
And way too much to talk about, as usual.
We fill out our notes and an outline for the show, but we never really get to the bottom of the first page, it seems like. And so, but today, there's several different topics. First of all, as an update, the contractor registry bill has been moving through the legislature.
Woo-hoo!
And it has passed a couple of committees. And so I would just admonish everybody once again, doesn't matter what side you fall on in this, but
admonish and encourage.
And encourage to actually call your legislators, your senators, your House of Representatives, individuals. And then just let them know how you feel about this. And what
State House reps, yeah.
Exactly. And because we do want to know feedback from the clients out there, from the customers, from the populace, from the consumers, what they're thinking about whether or not there should be a registry for contractors in the state, which is a database of individuals listing their qualifications, making sure they have insurance to perform work on your house, and also that they're going to carry a contract. You know, simple little request here.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all we're asking for.
And it costs how much?
it costs $125 a year
yes.
to be on the registry, plus $100 the first year when you're actually registering. So that is less than the increase in, you know, three sheets of OSB at this point. This is not onerous on the employer, and there should be no passed on expense to the consumer unless they're passing like a 25-cent, you know, increased charge to cover that over a year.
So let me give you an example of why this is important. This is a very timely situation. A previous customer of mine who lives in South Burlington had called in looking for contractors, and she could not find anybody. This is just this last week, because she, like many of you, have been having moisture issues and water issues inside the house, staining on the ceilings, the smell of mold. This was a unique year for that, and so she's saying, okay, who do I go to? She went to the Better Business Bureau. When she looked up many contractors there, she couldn't find any, but she remembered that I had done work on her house in a different form, and so she said, let me see if I can find him. Well, I've moved on, but she said she felt like she was Google stalking to find somebody.
Woman.
But she said by the time I got done with the phone call and told her I'd come back out, take a look, and maybe recommend to her which contractor she could do to make repairs on her house, she was just so relieved. That was her explanation, that she could find somebody to go to, because she said she felt like calling other just out of the blue type of companies, she wasn't sure who she could trust.
Right.
So going to somebody she could trust, that was so important. So this is why the registry is so important, because it'll let you know who the good actors are, who are in good standing, who actually are getting certified and educated in the latest building science techniques. And, you know, that's just really important from a consumer standpoint, in our opinion.
And another really important part of this is that if you're a builder, you should also not be against this, because it's not like someone can call up, complain about you, and you're taken off the list, right? What it is that it's actually a part of the Office of Public Regulation, Professional Regulation. They have investigators, and they have judges, administrative judges, judicial officers, they call them. And so there's an entire process that has to be gone through once a complaint is lodged against someone on the registry list, to actually have them removed. It's not just, you know, five people complain and the person is off. No, each one of those is investigated by a professional state Office of Professional Regulation registry, and then they go through a due process. If after that due process is up, that person is found to have violated the requirements to be on the
registry,
list, fraud, or that they didn't have a contract, or that they weren't insured, then the person is removed. And when you call up to say to the state, some, you know, this guy comes in and says, hey, I'd be happy to do this work for you. Well, let me check to make sure you're on the state registry. Call up, oh, you've been removed from the registry. Oh, yeah, well, that was the, no, sorry, but you're not allowed to actually do this work legally in the state if you're not on the registry.
It's a consumer protection
exactly.
safeguard. That's really what this is looking for. And it's also a benefit to contractors, because once you've spent the time to become better educated in your field, you can list those qualifications, and it will make you more attractive to potential customers.
We have been talking about an unlevel playing field ever since I've been in Vermont. That's in 2010. Every time I talk to we had a group called the Green Building Council at mm-hmm. the Home Builders, the VBRA, and that turned into the Education Committee. And we talk to builders, and they're like, well, you know, I've got all the certifications. I've learned about the building science. I'm having insurance. I'm writing contracts. It's these fly-by-nighters who go out there. They only pay, you know, they pay their $50 to set up a corporation. They may not have insurance. They may not have contracts. And they leave people holding the bag. And they underbid the good contractors because they have no expenses, the expenses that should be there. Like, if they're paying themselves $25 an hour, their workers $20 an hour, that doesn't cost the contractor $20 an hour. A $20 an hour worker costs the contractor $50-$60 an hour
exactly.
because of unemployment insurance and other insurances. So that's the difference in the cost. If you're paying someone who's fly by night and you're getting their workers for $25 an hour, and you're like, why is there such a huge difference in the cost? It's because they're not playing by the rules.
No.
And we just want the rules to be followed. And that's why we, as Jim and I, but also the home builders, the VBRA, the BPPA, the Building Performance Professionals Association of Vermont, the Vermont Passive House,
mm-hmm.
And we also have had other groups that are signing on to the letter that is supporting this. And we are just really happy that this has moved out of two committees and is going to a floor vote. That's why we're asking you, please get in touch with your state
exactly.
rep and say, we're not going to tell you what to say. If you believe that this is a bill that you would support, then please call and tell them, I am one of your residents. I support this. Please vote yes for that.
Yeah, exactly. So with that in mind, some of the things that we did want to cover today along with that, you know, now that spring is here, you know, the clocks leaped forward last weekend, but now so far it leaped forward that it actually turned into spring today. But spring cleaning usually comes to mind. One thing we don't want to forget is about the mechanicals of a home. When I say mechanicals, those things that basically, as Chris would say, they're the items in your house that try to bring comfort inside and make up for usually a really bad envelope design, so a leaky house. So the leakier the house, the more you're going to need mechanicals from heating and cooling.
Yep.
And so, but with that, all these mechanicals have moving parts. They have filters. They have burning elements, things like that, where they have to be serviced on a regular basis. And too often, in fact, one building that I was working in, it was 8 years after the building was built, I got up there just doing some volunteer work, and I found that they had an HRV inside. And that HRV...
the heat recovery ventilation, just to remind people.
Exactly. And that HRV filter had never been cleaned.
And it's supposed to be cleaned every two months.
Yeah, exactly.
8 years?
8 years, and it was impacted with the worst type of stuff. Let's just put it that way. And so after cleaning that, I made sure they got on a schedule with a local company to get this service on a every two-month basis.
Yep.
And that, you know, it's just how you also maintain the longevity of the unit. The unit can be really efficient right out of the box, but if you're obstructing its ability to operate, then it's not going to perform where you're thinking that it could or should, and it also will wear out prematurely.
Yep.
And so as you're thinking of spring, granted the heating season will now seem so far away from now after it starts to warm up.
Wait a second. You can't say that. We're in Vermont. Your family and my family are both big gardeners, as I'm sure most of you out there are. We cannot put our plants outside until end of May because of the threat of a hard frost. So,
But with that, still, as the winter we start to pull out.
Oh, and I love Vermont, and yep. I love the cold. I don't want anybody to misconstrue me. I love living here, and I think the weather is awesome. But people are not going to be turning off their furnaces until well into the end of April, I'm pretty sure.
So let us start thinking, though, about the fact that as you do, that you're lining up the service with your service tech before the next heating season starts to put a demand on the system.
Yeah.
Because that's usually when it's too late. That's when you start getting the first cold day of the year. You get the no heat calls because it's not operating. So do that yearly service or, you know, periodic service.
Yep.
Now, because Chris and I will go into homes so often and we'll see that they have a nice mini split system, a cool climate heat pump, and yet the filters have never been cleaned. And
how long have you been running this heat pump? Oh, 5 years. How often do you clean the filters?
Clean.
Filters?
Exactly. So there are companies out there that are actually specializing just in the cleaning of the units, and this is something that you can reach out to Efficiency Vermont's, their EEN network. They do have a list of companies that are offering this type of service, but your local HVAC person should be able to offer that same type of service.
I know that Chuck's does. Chuck's Heating
exactly.
does as well.
Exactly. But right now, if you do have a call, please call us at 802-244-1777. Once again, 802-244-1777 about today's topic or any other questions you might have about your building science projects or your remodel projects or your new building, new house build that you're wanting to get information on.
So, Jim, we have Jim in Chelsea. Jim.
No, actually, I'm right now in Waterbury.
In Waterbury.
I'm not in Chelsea.
We have a Jim in Chelsea. Jim, how can we help you today?
Well, I'm still in Chelsea. If you want to be in Waterbury, that's up to you, but I'm in Chelsea.
Okay, sir. Welcome to the show, Jim.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you're closing down shop, and I like the For the Birds program as well, so no problem there. But a while back, you were talking about, you sent me an email about these indoor air testing kits.
Yeah.
And I didn't receive anything from you or anything after that, and I was wondering, is that still going to happen?
So, how much did we pay you, Jim, to actually call in today? Let's have complete candor. No, this is something that's very topical.
$50,000.
Yeah. Ooh.
Well, Chris, is that in your left pocket?
That's right.
Timely call, Jim, because we have been talking about this so much, and then, you know, coming to an end sooner than we thought. We thought we'd have more time for this. But I said, Chris, let's get this teed off with the start of the YouTube channel. And so this is not lost in the weeds.
Nope.
We are definitely moving forward with this. In fact, I just purchased two more of the units myself this last last week so that we could actually accelerate the process. And you wouldn't believe
right.
that the number of people that just in this last week who aren't even a part of the show that have been asking us questions about this and
yep.
wanted to be part of the program
yep.
once we told them about this. So we are moving forward with this, and you will be hearing from us shortly. So very to call once again.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out the best way to get the unit to people and
yes.
get them back. Some people live a bit further away from us than a drive makes sense. So
yeah.
Jim, we have, if you're on the list already, which I believe you are, because
yeah.
we've had emails back and forth, I will be sending you an email. If you get an email saying it's your week, let's set up a time for me to drop it off, then you're on. If not, then you're just in the waiting list. But we haven't
okay.
retracted it. We're still working on it, and thank you very much for bringing that up.
Well, I'm in Hooterville, so if you want to meet halfway, I can take my SUV out of Hooterville through the mud and meet you somewhere.
Okay. Well, we'll figure out the specifics and get back to you on that.
Okay, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. And we're talking today about mechanicals. We've spoken – the interesting thing about mechanicals is, as a number of our topics, they go across a number of shows, right? We did a show about indoor air quality. We did a show about ventilation. We've
yep.
done a show about heating systems. And all of those things, anything that uses energy to do something in your house – is a mechanical. So when we talk about, we had two shows about passive house. And the whole point about passive house is you put the energy, well, the effort, I would rather say, not mm-hmm. energy, but you put the effort and the investment in the envelope, in the windows, in the passive things, the things that don't need energy after they've been installed
because
to work.
Because moving parts break.
Because they break. there was a moment, I remember this very clearly, about 8-9 years ago. Before that, solar hot water was a huge deal. Solar hot water, people like, yeah, put a couple of solar hot water panels on your roof and have a tank downstairs and all this. And it only cost like $10,000 for the whole system, blah, blah, blah. There was a moment in like 2010, 2011, where the price of PV got so inexpensive compared to the installation cost of a solar hot water system that they barely sell them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing happens all the time. Why is it better? Well, PVs don't have moving parts. You put a PV up on the roof,
yep.
and that thing runs for 40 years. After 40 years, it's still putting out 80% of the output it put in the day you installed it. And if you do that with a solar hot water system, you've got pumps, you've got glycol mix that's got to get changed out. You're doing a drain back system, or is it running all year? These are all considerations that just made it not make sense. So what we're trying to do with the passive house, and by making houses super energy efficient, is to reduce the number of mechanicals that you need in your house to keep it comfortable and do the things we need. And to but if you have mechanicals in your house already, then you have to maintain them. These things with moving parts, the motors, they get old and they don't work anymore. The filters need to be changed. The cores need to be cleaned. If you have an oil boiler, right, whether or forced hot air system,
mm-hmm.
though, and it uses oil, that needs to be cleaned every year. You need
exactly.
that serviced every year, just because oil is a very dirty burning substance.
And you also want to check and see how efficient is it.
Efficient is it?
Now
right.
you get make sure that they do a combustion analysis on it, that they are actually finding out is it 84%, 85%, 90% efficient. Usually, you're not going to get up to 90% with an oil fired boiler, though.
The Buderus does, but you need like a guy who went to Harvard for mechanical engineering to service it. There are literally like three people in the state that can service that unit. So what we would like to say is if you are using propane, that's every year and a half, 2 years that needs to be serviced, and with oil every year. So if you are happy with your local HVAC person who's going to come in and do that servicing, great. If not, find someone who you might be happier with, someone with a better track record. That is really important. If you have a house ventilation system that is a balanced ventilation system, not a house fan like an extract range hood or an extract bath fan, but that whole house ventilation system, those filters have to be cleaned every 2 months, and depending on the type, some of them need to be replaced every 6 months, right? So keep that in mind. The core and the ducts have to be cleaned once every 5 years at a minimum. the efficiencies on these, just like with the heat pump heads, go down when the air cannot be in contact with the actual surface of the heat exchanger, right? Mm-hmm. If you open up the head of a heat pump, you'll see that there are all these teeny little fins like a car radiator. If those are caked with dust and dirt, the air is not able to get to that surface and your efficiencies just take a dive. So get your mechanicals, get your oil service, combustion appliances, your furnaces, your boilers serviced every year. Get your propane ones serviced every
year. Natural gas one.
Natural gas
ones,
yeah. Propane every 2 years.
But the fireplace, here's a big thing. Because it depends.
Oh boy.
The fireplace, the wood stove, those chimneys, you hear about chimney fires every year.
Every year.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens is the type of wood that's being burnt and how efficiently it's being burnt will cause creosote to form, of course, in the chimney.
Yep.
And after a while, you can get a chimney fire once it gets above 600 degrees, and then you're going to have a possible real problem there. And so getting those swept is not just, hey, why not do it? No, you should do it at least on a yearly basis just to make sure that that chimney pipe is not going to catch on fire.
Now, I know people who are DIYers, and they're like, I can go to Vermont Stove and Flag and mm-hmm. buy myself the proper chimney
Sweet.
Brush
yeah, exactly.
for that one, and I can do it myself. However, there are also perfectly good services out there to do that, and we recommend them highly. If you are not an adventurous DIYer, want to climb up on your roof and do this work, they'll do it for you. It's not inexpensive, but it's certainly less expensive than trying to rebuild your house after a chimney fire.
And that's why you should engage these professionals now so that you're on their list, because usually people, it starts to turn cold again. Their leaves start to
end
turn color.
End of September.
And then, oh gosh, I got to make that call. And they say, yeah, we're booked out months and months. And then you're putting health and safety at risk at that time.
Yeah, make that call now. We're big fans of heat pumps. Heat pumps are great tools to either offset some of your natural gas or oil furnace boiler use, or as an entire house heating system and cooling system. That's one of the nice things, is does both, right? But those also need to be serviced. You're going to have someone come out, clean the outside unit and clean the inside head. We like once a year, but at least once every 2 years. And when you're running it, the manufacturers say that you should be cleaning those filters once every 2 weeks. Right? Because the nice thing about a heat pump is that it uses very little energy to work, and it gives you heat during very cold temperatures. The downside is that they need this, they're running the whole time. So, and they don't bring in air from the outside. It's a recirculation. They're sucking air from the room. They're blowing it over the heat, the fan coil, and blowing it back into the room at a different temperature. If that filter is, you know, sucking all of the dust, now we've talked about this in the past, the dust in your house is something on the order of 80% human skin, and if you have animals, dander and hair. So that's going to get caught up in that filter, and if you're not taking that filter and cleaning it, then you're breathing the
what you don't
what we just said
cannibals everybody but so with that, you know, the mini splits also work on the opposite side of that as we start to warm up, and if it's needed in your house, then definitely air conditioning
and dehumidification.
So it's a win-win in that perspective. And one thing that we're seeing happen is a hybrid type of system, and that hybrid type of system is trying to check all the boxes. It's basically is going to be a unit that will be a mini split that is ducted, so it's not just a, as they call, a wall wart or a head on the wall that some people don't like the look of.
Or in the ceiling, or
yeah, so they'll have a traditional register profile, and those will go into various rooms of the house. But at the same time, it not only will work off the mini split as a type of hybrid unit there, but if it gets too cold and that heat pump can't keep up and deliver the type of warming that you need, it'll switch over to a gas type of a heating system, where the propane or natural gas, and then that way you never get too cold in the house. At the same time, it's offering the benefit of having an HRV or an ERV, energy recovery ventilator or heat recovery ventilator. And so it's offering that, so your indoor air quality is improved. And then once you get into the summer months, that same mini split will serve as air conditioning through the same series of ductwork. And that's where we see a lot of this going at this point in time.
And it's very important that if you're going to be using that ductwork for both heating and cooling, that you have it well insulated. It doesn't have to be a lot of insulation, but if you're sending through 51 degree temperature air and the dew point is 57 degrees, you're going to have air condensing on the outside of that duct if it's not insulated. So make sure that if you're designing it or if you're thinking about putting a system like that in, that those ducts are well insulated to prevent that obvious problem of, you know, creating bulk water in your house.
You know, another type of mechanical that people are switching to and have been for several years is going to be the hybrid or heat pump type water heater. And I got one of the first because the rebates were so good. And we
GeoSpring, GE.
Yeah, that's one of them for sure. And but most companies now have come out with theirs, Bradford White and others, A.O. Smith, they have theirs. And then they're very efficient, and that works great. But you got to be careful because not every installation will work effectively. Here's what happened for us. We were a family of five at the time, and what was on the market was a 40-gallon unit. And at times, that does have a difficulty keeping up.
Yep.
And so now people are sizing up. They're going with a 50-gallon or an 80-gallon type
gallon,
of unit.
80-gallon, yeah, why
and
not?
And then you're not going to get, you know, these hot and cold water sandwiches or have to revert to some other type of hot water heating.
A hot water sandwich?
Yes, a hot water sandwich. Well, you know, when you get that...
Hot cross buns?
Well, you get the burst of hot, and then you go to cold, and then it comes hot again.
You create called striation in the tank. Yeah.
Yes, and you don't want that type of thing.
No.
So with that, you also have to make sure that you have about 100 square feet of operating space. That so you can't just put this in a closet that's, you know, a 4x4 closet or a 3x3 closet and think that it's going to be able to capture enough heat out of the room to heat the hot water. So usually an open basement is a good place to have these installed. But once again, they're very, very efficient. They're not the old school electric hot water heater. Now, granted, they do, since it's a hybrid, it does have the availability, if it's needed, to switch over to all electric if needed, but normally it can derive enough heat out of the room that it's installed in to heat the hot water.
Yep, and there's a wonderful moment in the winter, because I have one as well. I've got a Bradford White. There are two types of these heat pumps. One is a non-ducted one, which just takes the air from the room it's in, and the other is where you can run ducts out of the wall and take outside air, because the efficiencies go up when the temperature goes up. Well, what I've done is during the winter, I've vented my regular electric vented dryer, into the same room that the heat pump is on. And then I'm taking this heat that I would normally be throwing outside, that moist heat from the heat from the dryer, and I'm putting it in the same room as the heat pump, and they're feeding each other, which means that my heat pump that's heating the house does not have to then feed the hot water heat pump. That's called a parasitic load. And it's not a problem. It just means it needs to work a little harder to get there. So it's a cute little symbiosis.
But why does that work? Because we've told people before that dryers should not be just, you know, vented into the main space.
No, don't do that. The only reason it works is because the heat pump hot water heater is taking heat and moisture out of the air of the room that it's in. That's how it works. It's that one part of the air conditioner, right? The air conditioner has what we were talking about yesterday, the Carnot cycle, right?
Yes.
The Carnot cycle is where you have a gas that you compress with a compressor. That compression of gas decreases the energy level, which needs energy added to it. So it releases quite a lot of heat when you're compressing, right? Because you're going from gas to a liquid. That's from a higher energy level to a lower energy level. Energy has to be released somewhere, and that is heat, and we capture that heat in the heat pump to, in this case, heat hot water. The other side of that is the expansion part, where you have a liquid that needs to be turned back into a gas. And when you go from a lower energy level to a higher energy level, from a liquid to a gas, you have to take energy out of the surrounding area to add that energy into that liquid to make that gas happen, or the transition from liquid to gas happen. And then that's we experience that as cold. So there's a cold side to the Carnot cycle, and there's a hot side the Carnot cycle. And depending on what kind of useful work you want to do with that, we either capture one or the other, or both, or one or the other, depending on the season. So your refrigerator, for instance, always captures the expansion part of that because it's trying to cool things. The heat pump if it's not in cooling mode, is interested in heating, so it's capturing that compression side. When it wants to go to cooling mode, if it's hot out and you want to cool your house down, your regular air conditioner is doing exactly what the same part of the Carnot cycle that your refrigerator is doing and that your wall wart heat pump head is doing when you're cooling. It's taking that expansion part. So that's how the heat pump works, and it just is super efficient because it's taking the electricity to make it run, but that's not the majority of the energy that's going into it. It's actually taking that energy from the air of the room around you or from the outside in the case of
a
split.
So, Chris, how does that same type of technology translate into what a dryer would do?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. I was actually my dishwasher broke, and I was at a local appliance store today, and I asked them if they had any heat pump dryers.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about dryers, and we were just talking about domestic hot water, but let's jump to dryers for a second, because there are basically three options for dryers, right? You have an electric dryer that automatically takes inside air, heats it up, blows it through the clothes, and then ejects that heated air out of the house through a hole in the wall, right? That's one. That's called a direct exhaust electric dryer. Then we have either a propane or natural gas heater dryer that will do this. It takes the air from the inside, it heats it up, it passes it through the clothes, and that damp, moist air is just blown right outside of the house, which depressurizes the house, right? Then we have a series, there are two technologies actually that are dryers that don't do that. One is a condensing dryer, and the other is a heat pump dryer. The condensing dryer uses cold water to create a surface that is below the dew point where the air that's being blown over the clothes is very moist, and that condenses that out of the air. Mm-hmm. So that does not need to then be directly vented out of the house. And the other is a heat pump dryer, which is exactly what we were just talking about. It takes that compression part of the Carnot cycle, and it takes that to heat the air, and then it uses the energy from that to dry, but then it also uses the condensing side to condense the moisture out. So it doesn't need to vent either. Now, heat pump dryers are expensive compared to a normal dryer.
Mm-hmm.
However, you get conventional dryers right now that are all kinds of super bells and whistles.
Oh, $1,500
and tell you stuff.
Easily. Yeah.
Well, a brand new heat pump hot water heater from Whirlpool.
Dryer, you mean?
Dryer, sorry. Yeah. A dryer from Whirlpool will cost you $1,000, $1,200. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to put a hole in your wall.
Exactly.
Which is just bonus for me. When I'm running my dryer in the middle of the winter, I'm like, oh boy, that draft coming back in when it's not on, because I'm not standing there every minute that it's on, that cools that room down.
Yeah.
I'd rather not do that. So we're big fans of the heat pump dryers, and they're like, you can almost not buy a non-heat pump dryer in Japan at this point. And we'll get to the point where the price comes down, where
yes,
a heat pump dryer costs, you know, $700-$800, and that should be entry level for just about anyone.
Certainly. And, you know, the one thing, too, that this goes back to the maintenance side, because when you have that hole in the side of your wall, you have a dryer vent, and that dryer vent, many times, with the dust that accumulates, the vents do not close appropriately anymore, and thus animals can come back through, birds can come back through, but also so does the outdoor temperatures come right back through, especially if you turn on a bath fan or a vent hood.
And depressurize the house somewhere else.
It'll pull right back through that dryer, and it's going to work against what you're trying to achieve with efficiency inside the building.
Yeah, and you also have another hole in your house.
Yes.
Which needs to be protected from moisture, you know, bulk water, things like that. So anytime we can reduce the number of holes, wall penetrations, we do. And we're big fans of getting rid of, you know, direct vents anytime we can, whether that's a bath fan or a range hood. I was just teaching the Passive House class last week, and one of the things we were talking about during the class was, having a direct exhaust appliances. And direct exhaust appliances, sometimes the clients want really, really aggressive range hoods. I've seen clients asking, so you're out in the islands and you got someone, they have the money, they're throwing a couple $1,000,000 into a house, and they're like, I want a 2,500 CFM range hood on top of my 17 burner, does inside, you know, pig on a spit type thing. And you're like, okay, we can do that. But you know, The building science is very clear about that. If you're going to be pushing 2,500 CFM out of your house, you need to bring in 2,500 CFM into your house. And oftentimes, the way to do that is to give the range hood its own HRV. It gets its own separate little heat recovery ventilator. It's not doing anything for the rest of the house. The unit itself is like $1,200, $1,500, never mind installation. But the client's happy because they can have their, you know, you don't, with 2,500 CFM range hood, you just stick your head under there after you get out of the bath and you're blow drying your hair there.
So you call up the company that provides those vent hoods or the range hoods and you say, well, what are you doing to address that equilibrium?
Depressurization.
The depressurization. Yeah. And they basically will tell you, and this is because they told me when I
just put a hole in the wall.
No, they actually said, don't worry, it'll self equalize. How does it do that? It just will. Well, that does basically just tells them they don't understand the first thing about building science. And because if you get a really tight house and you do have an aggressive range hood somewhere between 600, 900 CFM or more, what will happen is it won't be able to push the air out.
Yep.
And when it's not able to push the air out, then what's the effluent, as it's called, or the exhaust from the cooktop will not be able to get outdoors. And thus it's not going to be effective. You're not going to have an effective burn. And so this is why when you're developing these type of homes, you're doing a new build or even a retrofit, you're taking all these variables into consideration and applying them appropriately to the actual install. But you can't usually rely upon just a salesperson to know all this.
No, because as soon as they sell you it and they've got the cash in their hand, they can just wipe their hands and say, I'm done with that. There is a really good article. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head. So I'll put the link in the YouTube video that we're going to put out from the show, which is the Joe Stubrick article on exactly, depending on the CFM level, what kind of makeup air, which is what we call the air that has to come back in to deal with a depressurized house, what the best way is to do that depending on the CFM you're pushing out there. And basically what we're recommending is don't have a high rate ventilation at your range hood just because it requires this extra work. You're going to have to put another machine in there that's going to use more energy to fix a problem that if you just went with a less aggressive range hood, which should be perfectly fine unless you're roasting that pig. Literally roasting the pig.
That's some pig.
Yeah, you go.
Well, with that, we had one client where we did this for, and it ended up being a $25,000 addition to the actual house build just to get the air that's coming back in a day like today or colder to get it heated and the sensors that were necessary, the extra heating circuit and everything else, just to get that all integrated. Once again, another $25,000 to the price tag of the whole house. And so that's a big expense.
That's a huge expense. I mean, I would never encourage someone to do that if I could help it.
But, you know, right now, one thing that's been so topical.
We're gonna stop talking about mechanicals right now because we want to make sure we cover this last topic in the last 15 minutes of the show. But so mechanicals is a big deal. We're huge on the maintenance side. Please make sure you get your stuff maintained. But there has been a development as that anyone who's been involved in purchasing any kind of lumber from any kind of lumber source in the state since COVID started that is just ramping up prices.
Well, they've started coating them with gold leaf and making them more valuable, more conductive. But no, actually, what's happened, there's been several events that have all – it's kind of like the perfect storm and with all the wrong for all the wrong reasons. But basically, the demand has really increased lately. There's been pent-up demand because everyone had been staying home, but now people are still wanting to do projects. Originally, when people started staying home, a lot of the DIY people were wanting to do decks and things like that. So pressure-treated lumber just became so scarce. But also the mills that produce all of this material have been shutting down due to outbreaks in their manufacturing facilities with COVID and everything else.
The
closing of the Canadian border was part of that. And so getting the actual materials to the point of delivery has been really challenging. At the same time, we don't have the same storage of inventory that we used to have decades ago because most of this is just in time.
Yep.
And so if you get any kind of supply chain interruption, what that's going to do is it's going to create a scarcity.
Bottlenecks,
When you have a scarcity of products, the price goes up. When you have an increased demand and then you can't get those products once again, the price goes up.
Yep.
And so all these things have been playing into this. But add to that, there's actually a glut, if you will, of logs in several locations, especially out west, and yet they cannot get them to the actual manufacturing facility soon enough. So people will say, we'll just build more plants. The problem is a lot of these plants were shut down years ago because they were trying to create an artificial supply issue. They used to have
There were 24 plants in the U.S.,
yep.
And in 2008 they shuttered 12 of them and permanently dismantled them.
Yeah, they usually what they would do is just bring them back up full speed once there was a greater demand. But this time, as Chris said, they just dismantled them. They took them down, so you couldn't even increase your supply chain inventory at that point in time.
So if you own Georgia-Pacific stock right now, you are smiling big.
Yeah, definitely. but, you know, so to build a new plant, it could take 2, 3, 4 years before that could actually come into play. So add to that money right now. If you're going to borrow, is still relatively cheap. Gas prices, though they're creeping up pretty quickly, they had been cheap as well. So delivery costs had been down. But all these variables are changing. Right now, they're forecasting that it's going to be a 3 to 5 year high. So some of these prices are going to continue to go up as we get into the building season, especially when the hurricane season starts and there may be a greater demand there for building materials. You're going to see these prices continue to go up. And when they go up, they don't necessarily go right back down again because they're thinking it's to ramp up production to get to where the needs are, it could take that long. However, I do foresee that there's going to be an actual market correction, not a crash, but a correction. And that correction is going to translate into the fact or come be derived from the fact that all these other things just get out of reach or things get too expensive and demand will go down and thus the price will come down again. So don't get caught up in the hurry and flurry and the hyper, you know, whatever that's going on to get into all these projects. Definitely, if you've got durability issues with your house, if you've already got the money saved up for it or you've purchased the materials in advance, you know, certainly go through with that project. But if you're just like someone who's just going to get into a new home building type of thing, really give careful consideration. Is it the best time? Because it may not be.
This might be a good time. I mean, we keep on talking about our buddy Mike, who's been planning on building this barn for 7 years. Workshop Barn, and last year did a series of pricings just before the COVID hit because he was like, well, if I order this stuff now before spring, it'll be here by spring. He was looking at almost a 60% increase in the material cost overall for his project. And it went from being something they could manage financially to being something they're just putting on hold until prices come down. And this is the moment where that type of decision-making process makes sense, right? Our members at the VBRA and other builders that we know who are not members of the association, and if you're a builder and you're not a member, please join. Go to homebuildersvt.com and become a member, and we can help share your voice at the State House and also give you support knowing about trends in pricing, which we get from the NAHB, which is the National Association. But this is a good time to think, you know, can I wait a year if I would push this off to next spring? I mean, like I said, our builders are into the end of this year, and some of them
don't have capacity right now.
No, there's no capacity at all. And although Jim and I, are specifically working on the workforce development projects through the state and hopefully going to be working on making those more realistic and bringing those into fruition, that's still going to take time before we have people in the field and new companies to increase our capacity. And a lot of that capacity is not being driven by local Vermonters. We have a huge influx of people from surrounding states, New York State, Connecticut, Massachusetts, coming to Vermont saying, you know, I don't have to work in an office anymore.
Exactly.
I just need somewhere where I can get some good internet. So let me live in this beautiful, awesome state of Vermont like the other people are. And I'm a flatlander. I'm from New York. Not from this wave, but from an earlier wave of people. And so we're going to see not only huge amounts of money, because these people come well-heeled. They're going to be able to come in and outbid your job with the builders that may have some capacity. So this is going to be a dicey situation for the next couple of months.
So if we can recommend anything, one, stay calm, make wise decisions.
Do not hit the panic button.
Yeah, exactly. But if you do want to go forward with your building projects or your new builds, your renovation project, engage a builder, engage a supplier that is willing to protect the prices as much as you possibly can. Sometimes buying in advance and then storing the materials on site. Sometimes at your local lumber yards if they're willing to assist you in this, but that has limitations at the same time. But if you have that opportunity to do that so that your project can still go forward now and you have the availability of waiting till your builder is available, you know, definitely that would be a way that I would recommend, that I am recommending it to our customers to consider these options.
There is the old homestead option, right? If you've got a piece of land with a bunch of decent looking timber, you can get a local sawmiller to come out and saw
you. Is this a commercial?
Chris? West Family Sawmill.
Yeah.
So there are companies out there that do sawmilling. I actually, my friend, I have a friend in Jericho. He's got a very small plot of land, but he's got a lot of very tall pine that he was hoping to cut down and saw into flooring. So there are lots of options to move forward, although our advice is if you have the ability to wait and weather this storm. You know, when we're by, at least in Vermont, by the end of May, we should all be vaccinated. We should all be back. As long as this vaccine works against the new strains that are coming out, we should all be back to a relatively normal way of life. And hopefully that will also mean increased employment in the construction industry and increased capacity for your projects.
Definitely. And, you know, and to that end, one thing that we've enjoyed during this time is when we first talked to the administration here at WDEV, we were wondering about sponsors and, you know, would they be able to be brought to the table and to support the show? And we thought that it would be an easy lift, and they weren't exactly sure, but they engaged some of their traditional sponsors. We put other names before them of people that we've dealt with. And we want to give thanks to those people who have been sponsors over this time and hopefully be returning sponsors next year. But, you know, like Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury, we have Shamrock Painting, and then we also have RK Miles.
RK Miles, a number of our members are very big users of RK Miles.
And they have, you know, basically locations in Middlebury. They also have them in Stowe and other areas. And so another great sponsor there, Sticks and Stuff. You know, it's another family-owned business.
We love Sticks and Stuff.
Yep, and they've got multiple locations that you can call on. Curtis Lumber, they have locations here in Vermont, also in New York, and they're, once again, another family-owned business. So we would definitely recommend that you give them a call and these other sponsors for
your building
needs.
We love RK Miles and Sticks and Stuff, and not say we love our Curtis Lumber. We love our lumber yards. Our lumber yards are an important resource.
Yes.
And we're so happy that you guys found it was worth investing your sponsorship money in our show.
And we have found that these and others are working with their clients, whether it's the home improvement person or it's going to be a contractor that is looking to do work. They are looking to do whatever they can pricing-wise, giving updates on where the market's going and how they can possibly get the inventory they need to supply the needs that are there. But also, you know, a good friend of ours, Matt Clark of Northern Basement Systems Solutions. And thank you so much for your being a part of and supporting the show. And also Poly Construction, you know, they have a pretty large company. They do a wide range of projects, and we're so happy that they've been a sponsor as well. But also the Vermont Builders and Remodelers Association.
Woo, VBRA!
Yep, which is a great resource for contractors, for homeowners as well, to find contractors, but definitely for contractors who need to know what's going on in the industry, what's going on in the state, and how that affects them. Visit our website, and you know, you'll definitely be able to capture some training opportunities. You'll be able to know how to engage other suppliers or subcontractors that are part of the organization as well, and it's a great opportunity.
We've got a virtual mixer coming up this on the 25th. That's next Thursday.
So that means it's shaken, not stirred?
That's right. Virtual,
okay, virtual mixer.
Virtual
Sorry.
Mixer. About that. So that's for members. If you're interested in becoming a member, go to homebuildersvt.com and you can join up right there. We're not just interested in having builders and construction companies, but also companies that support the building industry. We have, you know, a number of companies. Kitchens by On a Budget is one of them. International Flooring. We've got a whole host of people. Lake Champlain Closets is a sponsor of our company. company. But I won't remember all of them, and please forgive me for forgetting the other sponsors of the VBRA, but it's a great association, and we all stand together to move the industry forward and to support each other through all of these difficult times.
So, Chris, as we're closing on the last few minutes here, one thing that's important is to know where the show will exist going forward.
Yep.
On the WDEV website, they will still have recordings of our past shows. They have hinted around at the possibility of doing podcasts to keep this current as we move forward. There, we have talked to them possibly about some live show opportunities, going to some of these different sponsors.
Like doing an afternoon at Sticks and Stuff, where we tell you ahead of time, you all can come down and meet us, but also ask your questions and grab a cookie or something like that.
And so with that, we have the other where we're transitioning into for this time period to the YouTube channel, where we're going to be doing a weekly live show where you can call in and ask questions as well. And Chris, could you give us a little bit more information on that?
Sure. So if you haven't been to our YouTube channel yet, you go to a web browser and type in YouTube House Calls Vermont or House Calls Vermont space YouTube. It should pop up. We have past shows that we've taken videos of. I add graphics to them to make some of these slightly difficult concepts more easy to reach.
Very helpful.
But we will be doing live broadcasts starting on the 6th of April on a weekly basis from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And that will also be a call-in show. So you would go to the web chat, the YouTube channel, that once again, House Calls Vermont YouTube, and then you would call in the number that we're using specifically for call-ins for that online show. That's 802-200-2550. Once again, that's 802-200-2550. And we hope to see you there. You'll be able to, even if you're not calling in, there will be a live chat. You'll be able to type in questions, and we'll have someone on the side who will be able to take a look at those and continue to be a part of learning, building science.
One thing that's been so fulfilling for myself and Chris during this time is to be able to reach out to actual Vermonters and to help them with their questions and their challenges with their homes. And not only has it just been some email responses and some on the conversations on the phone, but actually visiting sites of people who have been listening to our show looking for assistance. In fact, after this show, we're going to Montpelier to look at a home where somebody's had some issues that they heard about on our show, because we want to be able to assist Vermonters and really show the practicality of what we're talking about. So that has been really rewarding, because where we've seen that there's been such a deficit of information and assistance in that direction previously, this is a great venue for that. So we thank everybody who has been a listener, who's been a caller, who's asked the right questions. It's been wonderful in that respect. And hopefully this has been a help to everybody out there who has listened. Sometimes we dive a little deep into the science, but yet we've found that is something that people have enjoyed at the same time. So we just thank you for listening this season. And hopefully you'll continue to engage us as we move forward in a different venue, and then also returning in the fall for this same format.
Yeah, this has been a real pleasure working with Jim. I mean, Jim and I have been working together since 2012, when I hired him to do a deep energy retrofit on my raised ranch. One of the things we'll probably be throwing into that show, I'm renovating a farmhouse in Essex on Old Stage Road, and I'll probably be throwing some videos up on how we're dealing with the energy on that, what wall assemblies we're going with. It's a brick building. How do you insulate a brick building? The answer is we're going to the outside, so we're covering the brick. Yes, we're covering the brick. That was a lot of fun talking to the town about that. But it's the right way to go, because if you insulate the inside, if we've spoken before, the inside of brick, it'll just crumble and fall apart on the outside. Going with some super insulated windows from White's Windows, who has approached us to be a sponsor on the YouTube channel, so hopefully we'll hear more about them, and maybe even do another virtual tour of their factory to learn about high-performance windows. So there are lots of things we still have planning. This is not the end. This is just a pause, giving you all advice on the radio, but we'll be doing it via the YouTube and hopefully be back next fall. So until we get to that point,
this has been House Calls Vermont. I'm Jim Bradley.
And this is Chris West. Until we meet again.
Thanks so much, everybody.
House Calls Vermont has been brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all online at polyconstruction.com. And for real estate advice, call Ken Libby at Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller William Stowe, 802-793-2002.